got a quad here, that's important. But he knows it already.
I did get a call from Daniel Basaraba that he was unable to attend tonight.
Committee will review, oh, no, 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 agenda review. Anybody have any comments on the agenda, add anything? Probably comment. Step up, 3 minutes.
See, no one from the public.
Well. Approval of the minutes, April 11th meeting.
I'm gonna send around the sign-in sheet again, because it looks like not everyone got it.
What we're doing is not controversial or whatnot, so.
We should have a council meeting by now.
Most crap, biggest crap.
Okay. So we want to make a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Second, all favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, now we can go to, you can talk at the same time. Committee will review, discuss the proposed downtown design standards.
So I don't have a presentation prepared. I sent the link out to the document, and hopefully everyone was able to at least look through that. Since the committee last met in April, there was one meeting of the design subcommittee. And so John and Kip were part of that group, and Steve were part of that discussion as well. So there were a few things added in response to that, to the site design and building form standards. So if anyone has any questions, or this really is up to the committee how you'd like to talk about this tonight. I'm not going to go through it all, but what I did is you'll see, did everyone get something that looks like this? It's a table of contents. So the document I sent out, the link to, did not have a table of contents. So I want to make sure everybody gets one of those, because if you're looking at this now or later, it's helpful to have that. And I'll post this on the website as well. And then when this goes forward to the Planning Commission and Council, hopefully we will have that all hyperlinked up so people can quickly find the sections.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for printing this out for me.
You're welcome.
This works better for me still.
It's a lot to print.
I know, I don't want to do that too, but.
Well, it's a lot of information, and the committee really hasn't reviewed the first sections of this. So this is a new chapter of the development code, so there's a lot of what I call the preamble material that needs to come before we start getting into the actual design standards. So, but when it gets presented as a code amendment, it needs to all be in one package, so. Did anyone have anything that you'd noted in advance of the meeting, or topics that you think need further discussion with this group?
Is anyone from the subcommittee that made changes to section 435 might just touch on what those were, or, mm-hmm. or make note of any specific elements that, because that, it's a sizable chunk, it looks like, from mm-hmm. the code that I printed out.
Yeah.
Although I think we looked at, my recollection is a good majority of it at our last meeting,
mm-hmm.
and what was adjusted or slightly tweaked.
can't recall that we really tweaked anything. Did we get? I'm trying to jog my mind.
Maybe a couple clarifications, switching or eliminating words, but nothing, no major tweaking going on.
The last subcommittee meeting, to my recollection, we really were focused on the building articulation standards, which start on page 118. And so articulation is how the facade gets broken up into different design elements. And the subcommittee actually at their first meeting provided input on what those increments are. So instead of 50 feet, I think with our new standard is 20 to 30 feet, you've got to have some kind of articulation. And then the proposed code offers a whole lot of different design options that can count towards meeting the articulation requirements. So the subcommittee weighed in on a lot of those. And you also looked at materials, at the permitted materials, so that's on page 129. And that's something, maybe we should look at that. I can pull it up on the screen too. It's a pretty brief section, but it lists.
It's too much work for my finger to do.
Yeah. Back to back.
There we go. Materials. So the permitted materials, do you want me to read them or can you read it? Brick, cast concrete masonry units, glass, wood, stucco or similar troweled finishes, architectural ceramic or wood composite materials are permitted. So the subcommittee, we talked about these. So for example, on the potential design for the new library, the architects that were hired by the city to provide some options for consideration. They were proposing some kind of a ceramic panel that actually looks like it's got clay in it, so it kind of has a brick color to it. So, we wanted to make sure the standards were flexible enough that they would allow that sort of material. And then there's language about demonstrated durability. When materials other than masonry are used and shall provide similar visual characteristics, color, texture, scale, similar to those used traditionally in downtown Springfield. It requires at least 75% of each street-facing facade, except alleys, of all new buildings to incorporate masonry. And then there's a list of prohibited.
Is that area of the facade or length of the facade?
It just says 75%. Excluding doors and windows. So
75% of area, right? Not linear, not.
The intent, I believe, is area.
Yeah,
but we should qualify that.
Yeah.
Basically, we're not allowed any material that you see from the 1960s or 70s. Okay.
So on the exclusions, so mm-hmm. It says stone veneers or panels. Does that include like the the artificial stone that a lot of builders use on residential construction? It's man-made.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And some of it looks the cultured stone.
Mm-hmm. Makes better.
And some of it looks unless you're doing the stone. See, that's where you get into questions like the stone veneers where they or like a brick veneer where they take an actual, you've got a brick face. That's an actual brick.
Right.
And so do you think that could be misinterpreted? The same thing with the stone veneer? Because some of those can look really good and appropriate to, you know, certain buildings. So, and then the corrugated or red metal, there's already, I mean, that's like one of the hot things to use right now. I don't personally care for it on the facade of a building, but there is on the 420 building that's going to be the new tap house and the food truck. Mm. He did that, I think, all the way around, didn't he? Wrapped that all the way around, the corrugated. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's, we don't have this right now for him, but sometimes it's appropriate. I mean, depending on, I don't know, what do you guys think? I'm getting mixed looks from you. Yeah.
Well, it's on here because previous discussions have said that they didn't want that in the downtown, either with this group or with the city council. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's called out that way.
And I do tend to agree with the corrugated because
for the downtown.
I think it's, yeah, it's going to have a short lifespan. But what did we, do we need to, on the stone veneers, mm-hmm. Can we clarify that a little bit?
You want to take a shot at it?
Well, what do you guys think?
Well,
you know I'm
following you. There's probably some that, you know, look okay, maybe, and be appropriate.
Linda, what would the process be if somebody wanted to incorporate one of these into design? Through, would they have to go through a variance process or design review process, type 3? Or is it just outright prohibited and there's no way to vary from this?
No, there's some variation that's permitted. The director can make a decision mm-hmm. without having to go through a formal process.
So I'm thinking more like the what they call the dry stack ledge stone, which is used a lot in residential, like a lot of wainscots and
base treatment. Or
yeah. So, and maybe that would fall under the paragraph above, when materials other than masonry are used, they shall have demonstrated durability and shall provide similar visual characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think that number 4 kind of
contradicts that.
Yeah, it does. I think that it makes it, it needs to be clarified or maybe taken out.
How about number 3 though? Does that stick? Because a stone veneer might be, well, I guess we're talking about natural stone,
faux stone.
On 4.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, faux panels are kind of a different animal, I think.
Yeah, as I recall, the subcommittee's discussion on this item was they were talking about like formula restaurants that have faux brick, like an Arby's mm-hmm. or something, where they just come into a community and they're just, that's what they're going to use, unless your community has design standards that would prohibit that.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe what we were hearing was that that's not what people thought was appropriate in our downtown. And then the stone veneers, I think that came up because some of the development that has gone in, like that Gateway School building that has the stone veneer, and some other things that we looked at in this committee, people really reacted negatively to those and said that's really not what we want. And it was, you know, it's not to say that all new buildings going to mimic the historic buildings or materials, but what I heard from this committee is that you didn't think that that was something that we wanted to replicate necessarily.
Can we have, does it get complicated to have two lines, one list of materials that is prohibited and the other one that is discouraged? No, didn't work very well.
So I see two directions with this. Mm-hmm. One, I think the downtown needs to look different than the rest of the city. Mm-hmm. So limiting things like these, I understand. though as a business property owner, I would feel that, is there really a need? I don't know. I guess there has to be, the identity is, this is downtown, this is what's different from everything else. If you don't, if you really are passionate about your stone veneers, you can go past 8th Street. I guess, I mean, it's not prohibiting it from the entire city, it's just from that specific area. Mm-hmm. So I can see both directions.
I think another thing that might have triggered this early on was the that building across the street that still is vacant, that has that false stone that's painted white.
Oh.
You know that one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And some of this came, you know, we had the design committee also that was giving recommendations several years ago. And so a lot of that was incorporated into this approach as well. The Main Street Design Committee and also Historic Commission recommendations about design. So this material is a hybrid of all those things, trying to capture what we've heard from different community members over time. But if this committee thinks that it's too restrictive, you can tell us that and we'll flag that for more discussion.
I think, like you said, contradictory, because if you have someone that's proposing to put up a new building and they look at paragraph A and then, you know, look at, say, 3 and 4, I think there's going to be a lot of discussion there. And
maybe the idea should be proportionate, the faux brick kind of thing, nothing more than 50% kind of idea. Give it a wall. I don't know. Just kind of get it out there. So like you said, wainscoting makes perfect sense on a lot of the things. I like it.
Could we say no stone or no stone veneer panels or something? How do we, or panels? That is a little odd the way it's said, or strikes me. Maybe it isn't. But I mean, usually those things don't come in individual stones, do they? I mean, when as a facade or
the word culture stone veneers is normally individual stones.
Is
So, I mean, I've used it when I was in residential construction. I mean, you know, you get boxes of the stuff, and then the masons kind of put it
pushing
all together
and stuff. So
like
that's
a puzzle.
Good,
so. And it looks good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of them look a lot better than others, and some look very natural, but for the most part, they do a pretty good job making it look realistic. That's why I don't think we should really eliminate that.
So the committee could suggest adding cultured stone to A? Would that clear it up? Architects, help us out here. Would cultured stone be considered masonry?
Well, a mason applies it.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a carpenter doesn't apply it.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
So what if we added shall incorporate masonry or cultured stone materials?
Well, that's the same. A cultured stone is the same as a faux stone, isn't it? I mean,
that's why we have to fix paragraph B if you want to do that.
I'm with Shannon. You know, if it's, you know, we this particular idea about what it looks like on the main street and
on the side of downtown.
Yeah.
You don't have plywood specifically mentioned as wood. You know, that's
right.
May or may not be appropriate some area because of building code, you know, for fire rating, but it is something that a form of plywood has different finishes. You know, maybe that's what you're talking about, wood composite materials. Plywood fits in that genre, maybe.
I would think that would qualify, but again, I think the intent of this, and if it's not going in the right direction, that's why we're having this discussion.
Yeah.
the intent was to have more permanent materials in the downtown for new buildings.
Right.
And that it wouldn't just be T111 or whatever the cheapest thing, or the faux stone panel that some fast food place wants to use.
Or faux concrete, like hardy plank. I mean, look at Capstone.
Right.
Unless it's properly finished, it looks like it's bulging all over the place, you know. So I don't know. We're starting to get into the subjective stuff here.
So the voice of your research from people out there kind of gives you an idea that this is what they didn't want. I kind of think we had to take that into consideration, some serious consideration, that this is a great time to say, okay, let's listen to them on that.
I think I added this, John and Kip, about library and city hall type buildings, if they are to occur in the future, that those materials for those would be authorized or otherwise approved by the city council. Or council designee, so they could say this committee or some design committee would be the, you know. Because a civic building of that nature may have a different need and something that would stand out from the rest of the building. So I put that in there really as a placeholder for more discussion when this goes forward.
Why don't we just make it easy and take out number four, because number three and four kind of are almost can be the same thing, because a stone veneer is, what, you know, what's a stone veneer?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's...
Do you remember we looked at that Hilton building in downtown Eugene that had the green corrugated panels and it had dark stone on the bottom?
I don't know that a stone panel necessarily even needs to be composite or veneer. You know, it could be a through-and-through product that is bonded with something to make. I mean, I think the more subgroups, as you're alluding to, is more important, is important in that regards, because there may be something out there that is indeed a faux stone panel versus a veneer, which means that there's layers of other materials underneath the stone.
Yeah. I thought
because
the
some of the, you know, the old
stone,
the old way they've made stone, you know, they, you know, with the look like rocks embedded in stucco or something, you know, like they threw rocks at it and it stuck in. That's what is that, a panel or is that a stone veneer?
Could be either.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying.
What do you think, Eric?
Then I guess leave it, because that's a good example where, you know, you could take a natural, like if somebody took a bunch of pebbles.
Well, historically, yeah. Now they do it with tilt-ups, for example,
right,
where they lay it on the ground and dump stuff on it, tilt it up, and what is it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a composite. It's a panel, and it's a, got a...
So we just leave it?
That's our First Christian Church. What a beautiful building. I guess it's not First Christian Church.
It's probably
something. What is it now?
It's a group of.
Yeah, it's no longer Sprout.
It's not Sprout anymore.
It was Sprout, but now it's a public house. That's what I was trying to get.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, from my perspective, I agree with Shannon that, I mean, you at some point you kind of have to draw a line to say, you know, we're going to protect the resource and recognize, you know, the historic significance and character, and, you know, from this point forward we want everything else to be somewhat evocative of that context. You're always going to have debate about, you know, whether a certain material is or is not traditionally, you know, used in downtown, and I mean there's all sorts of problematic things that staff is going to have to deal with, you know, as each application comes over the counter. But at least this provides a good basis for what clearly is not a traditionally used material. I will say, though, I guess the one exception to that would be, if you could scroll up. The one piece of the first sentence, wood composite materials, I question how traditional those may be to downtown Springfield. I mean, thinking about plywood, that's a wood composite material. It's probably not a traditionally used material. But, you know, again, there's not a perfect answer to this. And if you've knocked out some of the more offending pieces, then you're probably good as you're going to get.
Well, would it be better and more clean to take out the word composite and just say wood?
I think.
Because I think you made a good point that you're kind of stretching to more modern for that, but not for the other things.
That's my sense.
Could be.
Yeah. Take out the composite.
Strike the word composite.
I mean, you may still people say, well, plywood's wood. It's wood material.
Right.
And you will. But even to a certain extent, hardy plank.
I have one last. You're talking about, you know what is it? MDL, you know,
MDF.
Oh, there's the plastic laminate over an exterior grade plywood or composite. Wood that is can be used for exterior. I mean, it's a composite, but it's a plastic, and you know they would infill bottom storefronts with that material instead of glass, and it's finished on both sides. So, what do you call that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a composite.
Does it come under B2 or 4A? You know,
so it's a traditional material. Sounds like.
Pardon me?
It sounds like that's been used traditionally
for storefronts. Yes. And it's also, they have metal panels that come over plywood to do the same thing, you know. Mm-hmm. So, maybe we're getting kind of picky here, but.
Right. Well, I think the intent of A is that masonry really is the major material. And so, you can have these other things, but it's not going to be your whole facade.
So I think we're satisfied other than the word composite.
Yeah.
Keeping it or taking it out?
Keeping it?
Keep the composite, yeah.
Okay.
Many modern materials are, they are truly composite. But then that does open the door for the hardy planks and the siding materials that sometimes don't look too great in their detail.
Well, it often becomes a maintenance issue versus a design material issue.
Well, let's go through this B, because this is where we're really saying you can't do it. It's a lot more clear that this is not permitted. So, is there anyone that feels that corrugated or ribbed metal or similar materials really should not be on this list, even though it's used a lot and it's been a trendy thing for the last 10 years with voodoo donuts and onward.
Yeah. I think if we can eliminate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we probably don't need that warehouse look in downtown. Mm-hmm.
I know this is one that at least several city councilors said they didn't want. Mm-hmm. But they'll look at this again and they may change their mind. If the committee feels that it's really a great material that you want, you think it's appropriate.
How long from our work here to this being adapted by council? I guess it depends on what's that time frame?
After their recess, they'll come back in September, and I believe the transportation system plan code amendments are going to be put in front of this one. So I think we're looking at October, November, before this gets to council.
Because there's quite a spurt going on right now with new restaurants and tap houses and stuff, and a lot of those places like to incorporate that. Mm-hmm. So
They'll continue to incorporate whatever is currently permitted. So I think one of the strongest reasons that the council wanted to have design standards pursued for downtown was about materials. At least that's just my sense of one of the things they were really interested in regulating. And that was based on some of the buildings that were coming in that included some of these materials. But it sounds like we're still not 100% certain that this is the right set.
Well, it's kind of the idea that, let's say you have an entire downtown that looks broke, and suddenly the Starbucks building comes in. That doesn't really look the downtown that they wanted. In our sense, the opinion of the people that you did the research with said that they are not satisfied with this being what you'd say epitomized downtown. They're not saying that should be removed from everything in the city of Springfield. They're just saying, please, just not have it in the downtown Springfield.
Because it doesn't have a clear association with that historic character of the downtown. And we were directed by council to really not divert from that historic character. Remember when we had Marcy from Herbs Works, and she had work session with the council, and she was saying, well, there could be sub-area west of Mill, or a sub-area where different materials would be permitted that are more modern and more what people are really using right now. And council didn't want that. They wanted one set of standards for the whole downtown. That was the direction they gave us. And that's a lot of what informed this piece right here.
You can do a lot of ornamentation with all the stuff in Section A. So it's not really a necessity for Section B.
Now, if, for instance, if someone puts a sign up, oftentimes the signs are vinyl, plastic, aren't they? And so that's not really part of the facade, even though it would be attached to the building. It'd be all right.
The sign code is separate from this. So this is just about the building facade.
Right. And then if somebody wanted to put some street furniture, well, I suppose you could use a little ribbed metal siding on it or something. If I mean, in small quantities, that's not permanent. You know, we would have some allowance for that, but not like what's happening now, where the whole building is wrapped. The old 420 Club in corrugated siding. In a way, it doesn't look too bad, but it's not maybe what we want down there.
Yeah, and we added this the word facade here after the subcommittee discussion to be clear that it was just the facade.
So it doesn't exclude everything in how we can mix and bring in new materials. It's a tough one because you have to be kind of general in a way. We can't go down and list every kind of possible material, and we can't even keep up with it, you know, or have the knowledge about it. So. The grayest area is the composite.
Maybe it comes up in a pre-development conference. Well, I mean, if someone really cares, I want to use this, will you let me use it?
Do we need a vote? Call for consensus, something to move us forward?
Are we doing it the same?
I reveal, gentlemen and ladies.
Are we all satisfied?
I think it's fine.
I get the general sense we're satisfied.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So was there another concern that we had discussed?
You had discussed that when it talks about 75% of each street-facing facade, that we include the word area, at least 75% of the area.
That's what you meant, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it doesn't hurt to just make it explicitly clear, because there will be questions otherwise. Mm-hmm. Just in my experience.
That's 75% of the area that is not in window.
Right. Four doors.
Four doors.
Yeah.
So we're adding the words "the area"
if we're all windows
of each street facing?
Mostly.
Is that what I'm hearing?
Area.
75% of the area.
Area of each.
I can't edit this because it's a PDF. Yeah. Of the area of each. I'm seeing head nods.
Yes.
For that?
Yes.
So we'll make that change, and then any other changes that we discuss tonight. Okay. Other sections. There was some discussion on the subcommittee about roof lines. So that's on page 121. You're missing those pages?
No, it was just meaning on the...
Oh, on the table of contents.
This is probably articulation.
It's part of articulation.
Okay.
Because it's about articulating the roof. Here we go. Remember this one, subcommittee?
Mm-hmm.
So flat roofs are characteristic of our buildings now and are encouraged, it says. So that's one place where we say encouraged and not you must or you shall. And then they have to employ trim or other detailing to visually distinguish the building top. In an earlier version, we had more of that bottom, middle, and top design, and the subcommittee felt that we didn't need to have that provision, so we struck that. And then number two, so if there's a peaked roof, the ridge line should be oriented perpendicular to the street front, and that's so you have that more building wall facade facing the street. So the subcommittee talked a little bit about that. There were some questions whether or not we needed this in here. And I think more of this discussion in the past was about mansards and the desire to not allow mansards in the downtown because we'd had some negative looking ones in the past.
So do you say that in here that there are those still allowed or?
No, it doesn't address mansards anymore. But I think the roof, maybe you could make it.
It just says encouraged. It doesn't say.
Right. Doesn't prevent.
That they aren't allowed.
Mm-hmm.
How about if we have a shed roof?
You can have it and you can orient it however you want, evidently.
Uh-huh. I still love mansards. I'm going to go buy a property on 9th Street and just build a giant mansard.
He's the one that kept the mansard.
Did you get a really bad
that's
job?
That's about the only architectural element that my wife really hates, mansard roofs.
That's it.
It is.
Again, if you look at the characteristics of the downtown, that's where we have this.
9th Street. I'm going to buy it on 9th Street.
We have this guiding light of, you know, the existing historic character, even though we don't have that many historic buildings
There's
in the downtown.
That.
But the ones we do have, they do not have peaked roofs, and they do not have mansards. They have flat roofs.
So, focusing on the flat roofs,
mm-hmm.
So as far as trim or other detailing, what is alluded to in terms of other detailing? Are you wanting to encourage use of cornices, parapets, something else?
Well, we do have more.
Is there anything that you wouldn't want to have in terms of detailing? Metal top cap? I mean,
I don't know.
Because tying back to the facade discussion, I mean, in mm-hmm. terms of traditionally used designs, cornices and parapet walls would probably be the two
mm-hmm.
most traditionally utilized.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But we're not requiring
But they're
them.
Expensive.
Right, and we're not
so
requiring
So you're not
going to
get them unless you actually you make that mm-hmm. explicit.
Right. But we do have, you know, as you go through the architectural details section, those are called out as architectural details that count towards the articulation requirement.
Hmm.
So they're listed and shown as a choice. Doesn't mean you have to do it, but it's they're going to have to do a certain number of those things, and they can choose to utilize those roof options to meet the articulation standard.
Well, is there a way to meet the articulation standard and not incorporate parapets or cornices?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But they're often used to disguise mechanical equipment, elevator,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know, equipment, so forth on a roof. So like downtown, everything's so condensed that you have to put it somewhere depending on what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And they are required to do that, so that is one of the mechanisms that is approved. And that's in the screening section. And then we provided some examples of roofline variation. So number three is encouraged. It's not you shall. It's encouraged for building facades longer than 60 feet. And that's about the width of the Planktown building. So does the committee feel that this is sufficient, or do you think it should be a shall or a must? Or to not be addressed at all?
Which?
The variety of building heights is a characteristic. So right now, you know, what we have out there, we have a variety of heights, but it's mostly, you know, 1 to 2 story buildings. But we also don't really have many that have facades larger than 60 feet, except for maybe the Justice Center and some of the newer things. And like the Royal Building is about 90 feet in width, the facade. And so we're talking just about the top roof line.
Basically, by doing it this way where it's not an absolute,
mm-hmm.
it allows them to have leverage or allows them to come up with their own idea, but it makes them understand that we don't necessarily approve of the idea if it goes I mean, we'll talk bad about them at parties and stuff, so it might discourage them.
Yeah. Well, what we do say they can't do is number two. So breaks in roof lines may not be created by a series of facade extensions above a roof line that create a row of boxes look. And I asked the city attorney to look at that language. She seemed to think it was okay because it's clearly stating what is encouraged, which is this type of roof articulation.
In the middle?
All of these.
All of them.
So here's our historic buildings on the right and left, and here's something that has a similar form to that. And then some modern buildings that have a similar way of dealing with that. So they have prominent cornice or eave.
And then?
And then this is really what the committee didn't want to have, is this type of thing. So these, I'm calling these facade extensions above a roof line. And this picture is just an excerpt of this building, but it's a large building that has this top form, which may be great in some location, but it's certainly not what we have in the downtown. So it would be a real, it would stand out quite a bit from our existing pattern.
So the comparing that photo, the not permitted photo, to the photo immediately up
above this
above
one?
It at the very top.
In the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yes.
What's the point of differentiation?
Well, this is an actual story height difference, right?
Sure, but I guess above the window line, what's mm-hmm. what creates the distinction?
Wouldn't that be a parapet?
One is a row of boxes and the other isn't, in your mind. I'm just trying to
sure.
get it.
You know, well, the difference
what's the thing we're trying to encourage or mm-hmm. discourage?
If we look at the sure. picture just below it, one, it didn't have any trimming on top, did it?
Mm-hmm. Not much, at least.
So it was just minimalism. Which is not something we really encourage in downtown anyway. We want minimalism, we go to Walmart.
And this is articulated, you know, dimensionally
yeah.
from the facade also.
You're going back to your trim and cornice and all that other architectural features concerns.
These are only like, what, a couple inches mm-hmm. offset? You know, it's mostly flat.
If the yeah. if the one on the bottom had more like banding, mm-hmm. similar to the photo at the top, would that be acceptable?
And I don't know what their design standards are in City of Eugene, but you know, they may require this something at the top, and so this is what they did.
Oh, I see the
obvious way
to
flash it.
It just extends up, and there's no reason to jump up.
Okay. Well, if you just look at all the difference in materials from, you know, how they, even the one on the left, where if you took that brick or whatever that darker brown outline is
mm-hmm.
away, it would be very bland. I'm not saying that's ideal, but it dresses it up a little bit more. Whereas it looks like they took the easy, cheap way out on the bottom, you know, by not doing any kind of any detail on the windows. You know, they could have, that was just a real inexpensive way to kind of create that look.
Right,
but
to create visual
look.
Interest.
Yeah, there's no, I mean, the taller wall and the different color is,
always
I guess, the visual interest, but that's a real inexpensive way to do it.
Yeah, it's like
do
he
we
cheated
say
on
no
his,
cheap tricks?
Yeah.
It's like he cheated on his homework.
And that's kind of the crux of the issue, is that mm-hmm. developers, mm-hmm. unless there's a market-based reason for them to spend more money on their building, they're going to do the absolute
exactly.
minimum to
right.
meet code
right.
and walk away from the deal and say, thank you very much.
Yeah.
So you just need to be realistic about
I respect
what
their intent, but I don't think it's what our community needs.
No, I agree.
Yeah, no, yeah,
yeah,
I agree
yeah,
on
I'm
it.
Just saying
just
it's,
put them up
yeah,
and move
that's
on.
Right.
I mean, that's...
So I see your point now.
I,
there's
yeah.
just greater articulation to the architectural elements on the top picture and the bottom picture. Mm-hmm. And hopefully they have to meet a certain number of the requirements for building articulation, and mm-hmm. and we impose right. enough of that that we don't end up with the bottom mm-hmm. building.
As a property owner, I would say you did a fantastic job, architect. But yeah, I'd hate it. You know, being so cheap.
So, looking at page 120, mm-hmm. I'm using, well, if, I don't know if everyone has the code language in front of them, but Linda, maybe if you want to go back to the photo, the building that we don't like.
Oh, okay.
But then if the committee under...
This one?
Yep. So, that one, that one could have, as from the facade articulation options, you have mm-hmm. to choose four. So, they, somewhere on that building, they could have incorporated masonry details, a belt course, lighting fixtures, and medallions, and
craning and stuff like that.
It wouldn't be, they would satisfy the articulation standard.
Okay. So on the rest of the building, it would look
and
okay.
the roof, yeah. Could still be, I mean, it could still be exactly as it is. Yeah.
That building is long, is wider than 60 feet. I'm sure it is, and so they would have been required to have those vertically articulated elements also, mm-hmm. that are three-dimensional offsets. Our existing code requires that as well.
And what's our distance of offset?
And then.
Instead of 8 inches.
So this is what I'm talking about, this vertically modulated element. 20 to 30 feet, and it had to be 4 feet deep. So it really is an articulation. It's yeah. not just a 3-inch right. variation of whatever that material is that they used on the capstone building. I think the intent of including that roofline thing was just to try and say that that's not the characteristic of our downtown and that we're trying mm-hmm. to achieve
I think it's good.
Something that fits in, but here's all these other ways to do that. It doesn't have to be a parapet with cornice. We did get, you know, we had an open house on these standards, and we had some other architects that participated, and they said, please don't require a cornice, please, you know. Mm-hmm. Because they don't like to be put in a box mm-hmm. as a designer either, so we're trying to create lots of different options, but prevent the worst things by being clear about that pattern doesn't fit with our downtown. But yeah, each one of these is a discussion in itself, so. So any suggestions, or do you want to keep this as is, going into the next level of review with the public and the Planning Commission and Council, or is there something that you feel really you'd like to change? Is there anyone that feels that this is not a good example of what's not permitted?
Well, it's poking fun at Eugene a little bit.
I know the exact building.
Yeah.
It's on 13th Street.
Well, there's a lot more wrong with it than just whether the roof goes
Yeah, there's a lot more.
Yeah. Well, the thing about this is this building is all over the place.
Yeah.
I was in New Orleans in April, and I was on a bus. And I saw buildings that looked just like this, and I heard people talking about them on the bus saying, God, they hate those buildings, and why do they make them look like that? I mean, I'm not kidding, just...
Yeah.
Unfortunate. Not in the Eugene Planning Department.
It's being taught in the courses I took.
Yeah, I think what is offensive to a lot of folks that maybe aren't architecturally experienced or trained is the use of color to break up a facade as the only thing that breaks up a facade. I think that's what people react to because they tend to be really contrasty colors, and they just pop out in the landscape.
Yeah.
And so
pretty sore.
I think that's what a lot of folks don't like. And people that do like them probably like it for that reason.
Yeah, uh-huh.
But would that color be there if there were no design standard that the community had that said you had to articulate and that that was one of the ways you could do it? I don't know.
Right.
If that's just something that's employed to meet a standard or if that's something that the architect really thinks is a beautiful building or the client thinks is a beautiful building. We don't know that. So. Okay.
I think there's some intention to create interest on the facade. And, you know, that's a solution.
But they have to work for it. Definitely those four, doing those four different things. At least, if you're going to give us a sucky roof line, you better be working for it.
Mm-hmm.
Give us some four features that we like.
It's not perfect, you know.
No.
We're not. We mm-hmm. can't, you know. It's,
right.
It's,
does it tell a story about what the community is trying to achieve
yeah.
with the photographs?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's really the intent of this.
That's the important part.
Yeah.
I think the use of the blue boxes is helpful for the
mm-hmm.
narrative side, and
right.
I know. You have to be very subjective about what you're saying. You can't. So you look how, you know, you have to be more based on what you're seeing versus what you're thinking so about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that helps in this. The blue box under you're not permitted is, plays and make sure that people do read your commentary about details and how they affect the facades.
Mm-hmm.
A few words.
And you know, when I present this to the Planning Commission and Council and the public at the next open house, I'm going to have like a list of 10. Here's what's really different about these standards compared to our existing code. And, you know, one of the things is the articulation standard. The existing articulation standards really combine architectural details and the building form piece. You know, the three-dimensional offsets and bump outs and recesses is kind of one category. And this code splits those two things. And so the larger your building is, the more articulation of the building wall, the depth of that wall and how it articulates is required. And then the architectural details, those are really for smaller buildings. You know, smaller buildings only need architectural detail. They don't need all the modulation stuff. So that's a difference. And it really addresses the fact that you might in the future get some larger buildings that would really dominate.
Moving on from that, well, using that example, moving on to how it touches the sidewalk. Relates to the sidewalk or the ground, is that coming in the landscaping section? Is there a section?
No, that's the frontage standards, which we did at the very beginning. So that's on page
22.
Yeah, 72, 73, that whole section that talks about the different options.
Okay, so
for frontage,
do you have not allowed in that section too, or is there? I mean, maybe that's.
No, I don't think we have a not allowed. We just have you shall do one of these.
Yeah. Okay. It's.
But some frontages are not permitted on certain streets. But this is the frontage standards. All of this.
Oh right. Okay. Yeah. I remember. Okay, yeah, that's pretty specific there.
And none of our examples show faux stone or cultured stone. I mean, I could see, like, Karen, what you were talking about for residential design. I mean, if somebody was doing a townhouse development like this, I could see incorporating stone into something like that. I just don't see it on a commercial building, and so...
Well, it depends on the size of the building.
Yeah. We had pictures. There's this stone.
Your one picture.
So this is masonry. That's stone masonry.
Interior, you might be on the outside of the entry or something.
Did you have a specific question about the frontage standards, or is this what you're talking about? How the buildings meet the street?
I would have found it if I was just saying, relating to that other example again. It's not only the top that. It's how it touches the ground and where there's no landscaping. Somehow they got away with that. Maybe it's a zero lot line thing for a certain percentage of the property line length.
Well, the only frontages that require landscaping is the residential frontage where the ground floor residential units are abutting the sidewalk, like the capstone. That's the only place. And then if they do this plaza frontage option, they have to incorporate some landscaping into that. And then for residential, they have to have landscaping in the area between. So this is that privacy setback. And then for residential, they have to have landscaping between the sidewalk and the front door. And then if it's a forecourt, they have to have some along the edges. If it's residential units on the ground floor. If it's commercial, they don't have to. So commercial, there's no landscaping standard.
Okay.
It's just, here's your storefront, you know. And you can have pots out there. But there's no requirement to have landscaping.
Yeah, so more relative to downtown Springfield, it's not going to necessarily be like those.
Right. And then if it's a residential courtyard frontage, so here's your public sidewalk. You have a sidewalk that goes into the development to all the entries off of that. And there is a landscape standard that applies to the courtyard. It's listed right here. And then, of course, parking lots have a landscape frontage standards.
Interrupt it just a second. Is there a landscape standard for drought tolerant or succulents attached to a building that be not made out of plastic or astroturf?
It says,
well,
it requires living plant material.
I'm thinking of the Hub building, you know, you've got, I don't know, you know what I'm talking about, down on Franklin, they've got the side of the building has this green stuff, like it's carpeting on it to make it look like
ivy or something. Is it
astroturf?
It looks like astroturf,
yes.
Kind of.
It's just sad.
See, our standard wouldn't allow that material on the facade, right?
Yeah.
Because the plus side is, that's not downtown Eugene. It's outside of the downtown part, isn't it?
Which?
The Hub.
Yeah.
Are you guys eating still? Eat.
The Hub has bigger problems than just the astroturf on the side of the building.
And they're building another one right next to it.
I actually like that.
We talked all about these before, but some people might have missed the meeting. But there's a lot of different landscaping standards.
Somebody had too much fun.
Yeah, well, it was fun.
And then at the very back, at the very end of this thing, we list the requirements for those.
Living plant materials, I saw that.
Yeah. Living plant materials. I added that just for you, Kip.
Yeah.
And we do have something on the parking garage standard. There's a, in case we get a parking garage. We might.
We all dream. Just like you have a eventually get a parking
we
garage.
Added something about, living green wall systems and vertical landscaping. Because you do see some of that now on things like parking structures, where it's actually an architectural component. And I didn't have a good picture that I could use, copyright free, so I put this one in there. But that's really it. And the landscaping standards are a lot more flexible than the existing ones. They don't call out exactly how many trees and shrubs you need in a space. It actually allows the landscape designer to put forth a plan that provides coverage of the area. And we've gotten that comment from developer, you know, consultants over the years, that the code is way too specific on that. So this is, I think, the first time we're doing it this way, so we'll see how well that goes over. We do require, you know, trees of a minimum 2-inch caliper, which is a big tree. And we do require irrigation systems, including for street trees.
We don't allow weeds, right?
Kept free from refuse and debris, it says. Maintained, it's supposed to be maintained by the adjoining property owner. And then screening, I think this committee, we looked at this before, but this is one of the last sections that got put into the draft. But I think we've seen some of these photos. This is from the Royal Building, how they dealt with their trash screening within the structure of the building itself. And then we had a picture of one that does not meet the standard, because even though they have a wall around it, it's clearly visible from the sidewalk. And then some other examples of more like residential scale development on site. And then here's this section about rooftop equipment screening. Did we look at this with you? I think we did. Mm. So one of the options is raising the parapet on all sides. Secondary roof screening system. Or setting the equipment back 3 feet for each foot of equipment height so that you can't see it from the street level. So there's some options there. I don't know if they're good, but it's better than what we have now. And it doesn't say, you know, your equipment shall be invisible from any angle from any building, because it's just impossible to do that. I think it's impossible.
So satellite dishes is under that B somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Utility equipment. Television.
But you know, the code is administered in a way that's reasonable. So even if every single thing isn't spelled out to the 10th degree, there are references throughout our code. So there's really, you know, the only stuff that needs to be in this chapter are things that really are specific to downtown or different than the citywide standard. And we did put a lot in here about screening, because that was one of the things that this committee and others have remarked over time, is that there's just too much stuff that's unscreened out there in the downtown. We do require facade lighting. That was recommended by this committee. At least 2 exterior fixtures per 25 feet of building facade when it's located on an active use street. And this, a lot of this language is straight out of the design committee's work in the past on lighting. And then there were some examples of that. So facade lighting is, was used to also illuminate signs, or this was that custom light fixture from the Royal Building. So again, I know we can't codify everything, Karen, right? But we did say be composed of sturdy weather-resistant materials, because I know you're always going to get whatever's on sale or in bulk. But the function is what's really critical, right?
And distinctive features would refer to historic distinctive features as well.
I guess. And we are requiring alley lighting. It's not in this section, it's in another section, but we are requiring if their facade abuts an alley, that they have to include one wall-mounted fixture, I think every 20 feet. So that's a new standard. A lot of the buildings already do that because it's a good idea and they need lighting out there so they can see. And then this was just kind of put in at the end because this code also implements multi-unit design standards for residential development that currently reside in another section of the code. It's a really long list of things that are required. So staff went through that and did an analysis of all those standards and which ones were appropriate urban downtown types of standards. And that has all been incorporated into this chapter. And that's why this is here, this storage component. So there's no change in policy there, it's just bringing that into this chapter. Any other topics the committee wants to discuss? If you're ready to... Anything about the streetscape? Did anybody have any comment on that? You've seen it all before, but there may have been some new pictures added, or... The parklet concept has been incorporated. As a concept, it still, of course, has to be approved by the traffic engineer. And they're not allowed on arterials or collector streets, but they could be allowed on a side, on a local street. So we have examples of those and diagrams for if they go in, the dimensions. We address cafe seating. The committee's been through all this before, but I mean, there's really nothing in the development code right now that talks about the cafe seating. So if somebody wants to develop in Springfield, I think it's good for them to see up front where cafe seating can be located in the sidewalk zone. So that's probably one of the more important things that we're doing in this. I know it's a lot of material, but, and the committee's been working on this for a really long time, but there's really a lot here that I think will really help achieve the kind of outcomes that we're hopeful to achieve.
Linda, could you go to page 106?
Sure. That alley lighting. No, six. Let's see. Okay, here we go.
Right there, so B, just curious about B1,
parking areas.
I guess.
So what this means is we don't allow you to back into the street, except we do allow them to back into an alley. but they have to have maneuvering area, and the traffic engineer reviews those to make sure that they have the correct distance to back a car, that they don't have to go onto somebody else's property, that they might not have permission to do that. So this is the existing code talks about this, the existing parking lot standards for the city. But it's called out here because a lot of development will continue to take access from alleys, and so we're trying to be really clear that, yeah, you'll be able to use the alley in that way.
Sure.
Is that not clear?
No, I understand the intent. I guess I was just confused about by the language maybe a little bit. So maneuvering area between the end of each parking space and the opposite side of the alley. So I'm assuming that would be the side of the alley opposite the end of the parking space.
Yeah, that they probably don't own unless they own property on both sides of the alley.
Right.
So they're going to come backing out into the alley, and they have to demonstrate that there's enough space to do that maneuvering of the car. And the code talks about, the code has a diagram of how that gets reviewed. The 4.6115.
Okay.
So it's basically just referring you to that other section. And so if there isn't enough space in the alleys, remember the alleys are narrow. They're not 20 feet, they're 13, 14, and 16 feet. And depending on the angle that their parking is on their site, there might not be enough room. And so we're letting them know that they might need to adjust their on-site parking to meet that standard.
Right, so if it's a standard size stall at a 60 degree angle to the alley, they'd need typically about a 16 foot stall depth, and then you're saying between the end of that 16 feet an additional, you know, whatever, 4 to 6 feet for them to make that maneuver before they actually enter into the width of the alley.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess if that's the intent, the way I read it, or where it first came across to me is when it's saying the opposite side of the alley in relation to where that maneuvering space has to be provided, it seems like it should be the maneuvering areas between the parking space and that alley, not the opposite side of the alley.
It must be provided on site when necessary. So if there isn't enough room for them to meet that standard, they're going to have to pull their parking back on their site a couple more feet or whatever.
Right. It's just the reference to the opposite side of the alley that threw me a little bit.
Okay.
But
maybe it should have said within the alley or some other, if you think of a better way to say it, I'm all ears.
I think it could just say between the end of each parking space and the alley.
Yes.
But that's not clear.
Must be provided. Because
it could be the inside.
On site, so it's.
Yeah, because it's there. I mean, you continue with the rest of the sentence, but.
Yeah.
Maneuvering area between the end of each parking space and the alley.
No, they can use the alley for maneuvering.
Oh, they can?
Yeah, they can use the alley. They don't, so like underneath City Hall, there's parking. There's parking perpendicular from the alley. I park there almost every day. And I can back up into that alley, and there's enough room for me to back up. But if that's somebody's property and they want to back up into that alley and there isn't enough room to make that maneuver, and they don't own the property on the other side of the alley, they're going to have to locate their parking further onto their site to enable that maneuvering movement. That's what this is saying. And it's tedious, but you have to tell them that, because otherwise they come in with a site plan and they've done all this work and they said, oh, I thought you could just back into the alley, but they might not be able to meet that code. So this is just telling them, go look at section 4.6115 when you're doing your site plan to make sure that, yeah, we're encouraging use of alley for access to the site and parking. It's really important in the downtown. That's why we're calling it out here. Otherwise, it would just be embedded in the code. It applies to everybody, But we're calling it forth here just to let someone know that they need to make sure that they're able to do that. Okay?
Sure.
And then if they only have one or two spaces, they get to back up, because that's the only way out.
No.
Thanks
questions.
For asking. How's the pizza?
Really good.
It's good.
How's the salad?
Very good. I've tried each one.
Good.
Eat more salad.
Eat more salad. That's right. If a business wanted to create a parklet on one of the side streets,
mm-hmm.
How is it arranged between the business owner and the city to take advantage of a parking space? Do they have to show that there's enough parking or add parking elsewhere? Or
the short answer is there is no program right now to enable a parklet. All this does is enable it in the development code so that it could occur if the city were to have a program. And parklets are actually pretty complex. I looked into some cities that have them, Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, some other cities, and they've learned a lot by implementing parklets. A lot of things not to do or things that you should do. So we're not doing that at this time. All we're doing is saying that that could be permitted in the future. But there's a lot of details that need to be worked out, and it would probably be a municipal code item to have that. Or it could just be something that the city council authorizes the city traffic department to implement, just like they do cafe seating right now. We have a cafe seating program, mm-hmm. So they have to get a permit for that. So it'd be a similar approach. But there's a lot of details, like I say, that need to be worked out, because they have to be public space.
So we're just trying to get a placeholder?
We're just creating a placeholder design standard for how they would fit in with all these other things.
Okay, committee? Is this document good enough to pass on?
Yeah. After years of work, I think this is good. I'm satisfied. A motion to move this forward.
Second.
Second.
Second. All in favor say aye.
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 I want to compliment Linda for the finest document I've ever seen. You worked hard on it. It's magnificent.
Thanks.
Here, here.
I was just the vehicle of getting all this input, and
you did a lot.
I did a lot of the finding the pictures, I'll say that.
Yeah. Yeah, there were more pictures this time in the elderly.
Which I think will be really helpful.
Yeah.
We've never had this much illustration in our code, so I think it's really a good direction to go in. That's why I'm recommending it.
It's a lot easier to do it now than it used to be.
Yeah.
With all the afternoon meetings I've seen you do throughout all these years, it definitely shows for itself in this. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you. Great. Wow. Okay. So now we're going to celebrate.
It's after a glass of wine.
I'm sure there might be an item or two that gets looked at and gets kicked back.
Mm-hmm.
I think you really got it there.
Well, before we reminisce too much about this committee's work, because I was hoping we'd do that at least for a little bit, I just want to let you know that, you know, of course, you'll be kept in the loop when this is going to go forward, when the open house will be. And I think it would be great if the committee could come to the Planning Commission, you know, like to their work session or something, and just present, you know, here's our work. Thank you very much. They should say thank you very much.
And also thank you for documenting this so well for us.
Yeah.
Because it's made my life a lot easier, reflecting on when our last meetings were.
Oh, well, I'm glad you do. I learned a lot, and this is actually my last meeting. And we finally got a new employee, so she's going to start doing night meetings. So, but it was actually a lot of information. I'm really happy I was here, though.
So we can adjourn for the tape, and then we can still talk about, so we do that? Okay, so I'll...
Adjourn.